Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying, multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, last year I was finally pregnant, and now I'm finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. Hello, how are you doing? All well here, although it's really cold and very windy today, which is not ideal. So roll on spring, I say. A little update from Ren, who's at nursery at the minute. I think she's teething again. So she's got her two bottom teeth, but no more yet. But yeah, she's been having a few symptoms like runny nose, softer poos, that kind of thing. She's much more unsettled and grizzly than she usually is. But overall, she's really well. So that's no complaints, really, I suppose. She's getting more confident and more smiley, which is really, really lovely to see, just watching her personality grow. I was out on Friday at an event and, you know, people were like, oh, she's so smiley. She's so lovely. And I was like, this isn't the Ren that I usually know. She's usually a little bit more wary of people, but she was on great form, which was fabulous. I'm really sorry. I feel a bit croaky today, so I'm really sorry if that's annoying, but the show must go on. So back to Ren. She has got a healthy appetite and weaning is going well, but I really need to get a bit more organised on that front because, you know, I guess it's like everything. You know, some weeks I've got it all sorted. I know what she's having for breakfast and lunch, etc. And I think really I'm going to start introducing either a snack or a dinner into her day as well. And then another week, I've got no idea what's in the cupboard. So, you know, swings and roundabouts, but I've decided I need to get a bit more organised because I've had a bit of a rubbish week on that front. In other news, the Finally Pregnant Hangout is now open. Oh, I'm so excited. I can't tell you how nervous I felt when I launched it on Saturday, but I'm really excited because we've got some members. In case you haven't heard about it yet, it's a community that I'm creating for people who are finally pregnant and parenting. It's a space where you can share stories, ask questions, receive and also give support, complain about the hard bits, but also celebrate the good. As a member, you'll gain access to this exclusive group where you'll be able to join monthly lives as well with me. And this is a bit that I have to say I'm particularly excited about. I'm excited about all of it, but I just don't think that this bit in particular happens anywhere else. You'll be able to join a monthly online video support group, which will give you an opportunity to see each other and chat, because with the lives you see me, which, you know, I get good feedback on, but I think what's going to be really lovely and valuable is for you guys to all see each other and share your own stories in person, so to speak. It's on a video. If you don't want to have your video on, or you want to kind of join but you don't want to talk about your story or what's happening with you, that is completely fine as well. It's just, I know it's going to be a really, really special group, and I'm really looking forward to getting to know you and to seeing you guys, you know, all getting to know each other as well. So, yeah. So like I said, we've already got some wonderful members. So thank you if you've already joined. And if you haven't, you know, there's still time. By the time you're listening to this, we will have had our first live. So you've missed that one. But don't worry, because if you're listening to this podcast when it first comes out within the first, say, week, you've still got time to join our very, very first online video support group, which is happening on Tuesday, the 11th of February. So how do you join, I hear you ask? There will be a link in the show notes. If you're over on my Instagram at any point, you know, I've got a link in my bio there, or you can just head straight to the website. So it's www.patreon.com/finallypregnant. There you'll find all the information that you need about the membership and also how you can join. And you can actually join there. And once you've joined, I can send you a link to the group so you can join us there. Lots of joining. Join, join, join. You know what I mean? So that done. What's on today's episode? I am going to be talking to my beautiful friend, Jen, who is just a very, very special lady. I'm going to let her tell the story, but just to say, we cover a whole lot in this episode. And that includes miscarriage, termination for medical reasons, twin loss, stillbirth, donor conception, and surrogacy. It has been one hell of a journey that Jen has been on, but I can tell you that she is now mum to the most gorgeous little boy, Milo, who, when we were recording this, was about 5 months or so, but is coming up to a year now, which is just amazing. It's been so difficult, everything she's been through. However, I know that she would say, in the long run, you know, it was all worth it because of Milo, which is just so incredibly special. Other than that, it's just time really for me to ask you to share the podcast, especially, I guess, if you're on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook. Just share it so it reaches more and more people. If you can subscribe, rate and also review the podcast wherever you listen to it, it really, really helps. So thank you if you've already done that. And I thought I'd share one of the reviews with you because it's just really nice to read. So this one is from Lisa0527. So thank you so much, Lisa. She has said, I can relate to this podcast so much. After struggling with infertility, I'm finally pregnant from my fourth round of IVF. There are infertility podcasts and parenting podcasts, but nothing for pregnant women after infertility. It's so easy to listen to, and I even picked up a few good tips from the first episode. Hopefully you've picked up more tips from other episodes as well. But I just want to say a huge thank you to Lisa and to everyone who has left a review. And if you leave a review, maybe I'll read them out here and there. So you never know, yours might make it onto one of the episodes. Thank you so much for listening. And I'm just going to hand you over to the interview. Take care. Bye bye.
Hi there, Jen. How are you doing?
I am doing really well and I'm very excited to be here with you.
This is my first transatlantic interview, which is quite exciting. But we have been face to face before now, haven't we? When were you over in the UK?
Gosh, I think it was October of last year. Was it October of last year?
Oh, no. Gosh, I was thinking it was the new year, but maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was last year. But anyway, so you
Maybe it was the new year. Yeah, it was a while ago, but it was great. We met for lunch and it was really lovely.
We did. I was pregnant with Ren at the time, wasn't I? That's the only reason I have any concept of dates and times. Otherwise, I'm useless. So you are from Canada originally.
Mm-hmm.
You are currently living in Seattle.
I am.
Mm-hmm. And you are married to a Brit.
I am. Yes, I'm married to a Brit. I moved to the UK like in 2004 for teaching. I was an elementary school teacher previous to being a coach, and met my husband Nick. And I've lived in the UK on and off for about 6 years, and we're hoping to move back. I mean, I absolutely love it there. Love it. So I'm counting the seconds till I can move back.
Oh. Well, we will be excited to welcome you back, I can tell you. But today you're joining me because, spoiler alert, you have a little boy, don't you? Very recently.
Very recently. Yes, we have our baby, our rainbow baby, our miracle baby. Our baby on this side of the earth, I guess, our earth side, is Milo. And he was born March 28th of this year. So he's about 5.5 months.
Oh, he's so cute. He's gorgeous. He really, really is. And he is, you know, all babies are special and mm-hmm. precious. But mm-hmm. you have been through a hell of a lot, you know, and we talked about this just a minute ago before we came on recording. You know, I asked you to briefly talk about your experience to put the rest of the conversation in context, and like it feels insulting almost to ask you to put it briefly, but I will. If you can give us a bit of a history around how you got to where you are today, and then we will talk about the pregnancy, which was actually a surrogacy pregnancy, please.
Oh, I can't help but laugh when you say brief. It's like, oh God, all right, here we go. I do think it's really important to talk about the journey to Milo in the context of where we've come from. So we were trying to get pregnant for about 2 years. I was 36 years old. So, you know, everyone's like, you need to get pregnant, you're getting old, you know, the whole pressure from society and family and yourself too. You kind of feel it in your bones, like, I gotta get pregnant. So we tried naturally for 2 years, and then we got pregnant naturally with twins, but they were identical twins. So around week 8, I started to bleed, and they found I had a subchronic hemorrhage. But sadly, from week 8 to when we had to terminate a pregnancy, which was week 22, very clinical pregnancy, very high risk. I was getting ultrasounds every week. One twin had no amniotic fluid and wasn't growing. And anything you think could go wrong had gone wrong, and sadly, with identical twins. They had twin-to-twin transfusion. My membrane burst. I was leaking amniotic fluid. I was bleeding. I had gone to emergency 2 or 3 times. It was epic. And I had disassociated myself from that pregnancy from, I guess, week 8. And so it was very traumatic experience. That particular one was. Or that journey from week 8 to week 22. Saw 3 professionals, and they basically said, your life is at risk, and this pregnancy is not viable. I don't know how many people have heard those words. And we had to make the devastating decision to terminate. And so we had to stop the heartbeats. One day, I carried the babies 3 days, and then on the 3rd day, had my D&E, and my life changed forever. I had developed a blood clot. My health was at risk. I'm healthy now, so everything is fine. But that was kind of like my big episode, I guess, lack of a better word, introduction to pregnancy and pregnancy loss. And then the doctors were like, oh, you can get pregnant, no problem. You can just try in 6 months and get pregnant. Well, we tried to get pregnant. It didn't work. So we did IUI, IVF, still did not work. At this point, we moved back to the UK. We went to Zeta West, and they said, oh, no, your protocol in Canada was wrong. You need this amount of drugs. You need this amount of stuff, blah, 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 blah. Got pregnant naturally, miscarried. And then at that point, I had to stop and give up. I was like, I can't do this. I've now had 4 miscarriages, terminated for medical reasons. I need to take a break. I had PTSD, unknowingly had PTSD, and my life just felt like it was falling apart. And I just could not inject myself with any more drugs. I was like, no more needles. And then we moved from the UK to Seattle. And then I guess with that move and that transition, I was like, Nick, I'm ready. Let's get this. Let's do it again. Let's try to do this. This is now probably 5 years after losing our twins. And then we got pregnant with our daughter, Loey, with egg donor, IVF. It was a high-risk pregnancy because I had subchronic hemorrhage, which is, you know, not uncommon when you have IVF babies. So I was watched very closely. The supportive network here was amazing, the best I have ever had, and I've seen a lot of doctors. But sadly, 39 weeks, in 5 days, I woke up at 5 a.m. in the morning with excruciating pain, went to the hospital, and sadly, Loey was pronounced dead. So I had to give birth to her. She was born and pronounced dead at 4:16 on May 28th, 2017.
I'm so sorry.
I know. May is a really crappy month. And we also had to terminate our twins May 31st, 2013. So I was like, dude, this is not a good month for me. And then it was our period of grief, is the grief storm. And then of course, my PTSD came back from losing our twins. And just the compounding grief was just overwhelming. But there was this little piece of hope, little piece of faith and hope, like this can't be it. This can't be it. This can't be it. This just can't be it. And so from that hope, we're like, what's next? And we're like, surrogacy, are we going to do this? This is a huge investment. I mean, we've just gone through something just absolutely devastating and heartbreaking. And are we really wanting to do this again? Are we really wanting to go into this playing field again? But we told ourselves this was it. If this doesn't work, then we're good, but we have to try. No regrets. So we sold the house that we bought because I was pregnant with Loey. Luckily, we made some money off the house because finances are real when we talk about surrogacy and infertility and pregnancy, IVF, everything. So we went, we found an agency. So the fertility clinic that we went to, where we got her name, Chloe, they work very closely with a surrogacy agency. And I just didn't have the bandwidth to even research or think about it. And so they said, you know, we work with this agency. They're really good. They're really amazing. We know the policies, procedures, and the logistics. So let's use them. I'm like, okay, let's use them. Found an amazing surrogate. She lives in Boise, Idaho. She got pregnant with Milo. We created this relationship with her. And I can go into more depth with that later when we talk about pregnancy after loss using a surrogate. And then Milo, oh my gosh, that was crazy. Walking into the delivery room, first time after losing Louie, crying on the floor, and then realizing this is a new narrative, a new story, standing up, and literally within a couple of hours, our baby boy was born, and I was able to hold him. I was able to smell him, and I was like, this is actually happening. This is actually, oh my, I'm like speechless now sharing it, but it's just like this incredible sense of like, this is what hope feels like. And so he's healthy, he's lovely, he's happy, he's just so amazing. And I know that his sister and our twins are looking after him and they're here with us in spirit. And so now he's 5.5 months, and we have another embryo, a baby girl. So we're thinking of maybe doing it again. So we'll see. But right now we're enjoying him.
Yes, definitely. So if we can rewind back a little bit, you found a surrogate. So for those of us, and I might be in that a group, what's the distance between where you are in Seattle and where the surrogate is or was in Idaho?
Right. Excellent question. So in America, there's a lot of different, there's a few states that have legalized surrogacy or gestational carriers. And when we were going through this, Seattle hadn't legalized it yet. You can find a compassionate surrogate or like a friend or a family that could do it, but you couldn't pay them to do it. And so there's a few states, I think Oregon, California, and Boise, and Idaho are a few of the states that did it. And so Boise, Idaho is literally an 8-hour drive or an hour flight. Mm-hmm. So if Seattle's on the closer to Canada, the Canadian border, and then if you go down the coast inland a bit, there's Idaho. So it wasn't too far. We did the drive once and was like, we're not doing this again. So then we just flew for all the appointments because it was only an hour flight.
Yeah. And so you went to the appointments. Were you there at the transfer? Were you there at, talk me through.
Oh my gosh. I love talking about this part. Okay, so because we used a fertility clinic in Seattle and the embryo was in Seattle, she flew to Seattle for the implantation. So there's a lot of meetings or a lot of appointments previous because they had to do a medical check, a physical check. And they also had to prep her womb, as we all know, to get everything ready. And so she and her husband flew in. We went to the clinic. She went into the back, the implantation. Doctor came out and said, we're done. And I was like, oh my gosh, here it is. And they give you this little ultrasound of the cluster of cells. And I was like, it was that point where I was like, oh gosh, here we go again. But also, this possibly could be it too, right? And then she took a day or two to relax, you know, feet up in the air, totally sit still. Don't move. I was like, you're not moving, are you? And then she flew back to Boise, and then we went to all the major ultrasounds. So her first, all the ultrasounds we were there for. We were lucky enough that we could fly down there. It wasn't very expensive. We just did Airbnb. And then closer to the end, she had a lot more appointments. You know, the non-stress test and everything that we did not go to. But if I wanted to be there, we would FaceTime or she would send me a video. So there was always that. I was always there somehow. Or she would send me a text. I would talk on the phone before or after the appointment.
And had she been pregnant before? And the reason I ask it, did she know what she, you know, what she was going through?
Such a great question. So when you go, when you want to become a gestational carrier or a surrogate, you have had to have your own children, and have to be done with having children for yourself. That's like a priority, or that's a prerequisite for it. And so she's 25 years old and she has two healthy boys already. And it was her first time doing it.
Wow.
And so when you go through the surrogate journey or trying to find your gestational carrier, you go through this application process and then you go through an interview. And so we had interviewed two surrogates before her. And then they just fell through, something went wrong. And I was like, oh my God, Nick, I'm like, I've had it. I can't do this anymore. And he's like, third time lucky. I'm like, okay, sure. And it was, I mean, she's the sweetest thing. She is an absolute sweetest thing, a miracle maker. She is just divine. And so when you are matched with a surrogate, and then the lawyers come in and you have to have everything very tightly, like illegal wise, all the papers. And because we're going through an agency, we didn't have to really look for a lawyer ourselves. Everything was done, which was great because we were still really in the depths of our grief with Loie and really couldn't hold that space for all that. So we really appreciated that. And that was the benefit of using an agency for us. And they really supported us, but their main focus was the surrogate. So they really supported her mentally and her well-being. But you are able to create whatever relationship you want. So when you get that contract, if you want to continue the relationship afterwards, you can. If you feel like this is something I just want to do and say goodbye, you can do that too. Obviously, all parties have to agree on that. But we maintain relationship. Like we have a WhatsApp group, we send pictures. She came to visit Milo. I think it really takes a village and we're just so incredibly thankful and we get along with her and her family so well. So we chose to, keep the relationship with her.
That's amazing. And you did talk briefly, but you know, during the pregnancy, so you've been here, you know, more than once, pregnant, you know, at the very early stages, you know, the weeks before they turn into months, etc. And I don't know about you, but I certainly had, you know, more than my fair share of scans. And I don't know in the States, you know, here, what we generally get is we have a 12-week scan and a 20-week scan, and then possibly one later on. So it's not a lot of standard. I think we were averaging a scan once every week to 10 days for the first, you know, certainly up to about 16 weeks. I think after that, because my bump came and I started feeling Ren move at about 18 weeks. So I didn't have to have so many scans afterwards. So I don't know how many is standard. Did you have extra ones? Like, how is that conversation? And I guess it depends on the relationship you have with them. But, you know, did you have those panics in the middle of the night where, oh, is the baby still moving? Oh, is it still there? Like, and call her and just say, please go and have a scan today. Please go, you know, whereas I could kind of say to Bob, you know, oh, I want to have a scan tomorrow and book it and go. Could you do that? Like, how was your anxiety and how did you deal with it? Because it's not, you haven't got as much control over that.
My anxiety was crazy, was absolutely nuts. Because when I was pregnant with Loie, I had done the personal work. I knew what to do with emotions. I mean, anxiety, you still get anxious, you still get fearful, but I was able to ride it through. But this was such a different game. I mean, I wasn't pregnant, someone else was pregnant, and we are literally, you know, an hour flight away. So I was very honest with her in the beginning, and we talked a lot about my pregnancy with Loie and how I was, you know, I have PTSD, grief shows up a lot. This is how grief shows up for me. I get anxious, I get angry. And so there's a lot of emotions that's going to accompany this relationship, and I hope you're ready for it. And she was, and she was beautiful about it. And so with the scans, the American medical system is so different. The private system is so different. So you can ask for as many scans as you want. You do have to pay for it, but you can ask for them. Going through IVF to get this baby, we did a lot of scans in the beginning. And I was there for probably 60% of them. So the first time we had a scan, the sonographer, I can never say their name.
But sonographer, yeah.
Thank you. She was just in her own little world, right? And she was like getting her ready and then taking her time. And I'm like nervous, right? I'm just like, what the? I need to know there's a heartbeat. Like, that's the first thing you need to tell. She's like, okay, let's just do that. I'm like, at this point, I was like, I was done. I was like,
ripping it off her and doing it yourself. She's like, I want to see it. Yeah.
I flew all this way. Just let me freaking hear the heartbeat, people. So I basically said to her, I said, I don't know if I'm going to see you again. I don't know if this is the only interaction we're going to have, but you have to understand, I've had a stillbirth. The first thing you need to do when I walk into this room is tell me that there's a heartbeat. And she looks at me and she's like, oh, yes, of course. And then she realized it. The second time I went in, totally different person. And then I said the same thing. And she said, well, there is a procedure we have to go through. And I go, I respect your procedure, but you have to understand, I'm suffering from PTSD. You need to tell me there's a heartbeat. And I was just a matter of fact. I was like, I have to self-advocate for myself right now. And I have to be willing to step out of my comfort zone and say, this is what I need. From that day forward, I spoke to the doctor and the nurse, and they advised all the staff that they have to do this, because it was really triggering, especially when I fly all the way over there to experience it. But the second time I had that experience, I actually Amazoned her a heart monitor. You know, those things. Doppler, thank you. Yeah, a Doppler monitor. And so she was able to do that. And she would send me, you know, occasionally. I would text her every day. So there's always an interaction every day. If I was anxious, I'd be like, can you just check? And she would, and she would send it my way. And then when he started to move, she would send me pictures or videos of him moving. So there was a lot more interaction because of what we had gone through. But I tend to be kind of a control freak. From what I've experienced, you cannot not be, right?
Absolutely.
So I had to really learn to trust. I had to really learn to be like, this is enough. She's given me a heartbeat today. She sent me pictures. We've had conversations. Like, fact is, she's pregnant and Milo's doing well. And just take it as it is. But yeah, there are moments where I was like, oh my God, like I don't have any control about this or control over this. Then there's also moments where like I had reprieve, I had a break because I myself wasn't pregnant. So I could still live every day and be like, oh, I'm pregnant. Not physically, but we're pregnant. And so it was a lovely balance for me of kind of like, okay, I don't have control, but however, I just had like 2 hours of not realizing I was pregnant, and it felt so good to feel kind of normal in that way. So it was a good kind of balance of both.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that actually, because you're not physically pregnant. Like, you don't have that. Like, it's never far from the front of your mind, don't get me wrong, but you know, it's, you don't have that kind of constant visual reminder. And so there might be times where you get distracted or just like get thrown into something and you're not thinking about it. So in that way, those bits are kind of make it easier. But then the flip side is, if you suddenly feel really anxious, and like I say, I could just take myself off to, you know, have a scan. And I was exactly the same. Like, just tell me there's a heartbeat and then do everything you need to do after that. I just need the nod every time. That was, yeah. So I totally get that. But yeah, you haven't got the control over that as much. Like, none of us have control over the pregnancies. It doesn't matter how it manifests itself. But there is an element of control that you have when it's you, because you can just take yourself off. And, you know, whereas you might feel anxious, call the surrogate and they might have plans that day. They might not physically be able to go and get a scan, even, you know. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Like, in a really flippant way, I'm going to say it swings and roundabouts, but obviously that kind of doesn't cover it. But you know what I mean.
Yeah, totally. And you know, I really appreciate, sorry. And I was going to say, I love that you were saying, you know, with this journey, there is no guarantee. And that's something that I kind of held onto myself too. Like I always had to tell myself, we're pregnant right now. Like we're pregnant right now and you're doing all that you can. But as we all know, there's just no guarantee. So I was trying to enjoy that moment. So I'm glad that you brought that up.
I was exactly the same. And that's something that I say to people time and time again. It's like, right now I'm pregnant and we just have to hold on to that and celebrate that fact. And yeah, it just, because we just don't know, any of us, but you know, pregnancies do happen. We're both sat here with our little ones being looked after. Well, my little one is in bed at the moment. Your one is being looked after. So, you know, it does happen. Now, a couple of other things, if we can just talk about, because I know that people will be listening and, you know, different questions come up. The first one is people that I know that have had donor, well, actually, this is one person said this to me. They had, I don't want to say a panic, I'm probably putting words into their mouth by saying that, but there was a nervousness during the pregnancy, particularly early on. Like, am I going to want this baby? Am I going to, you know, is it going to be mine, so to speak? You know, is, have I done the right thing? You know, and a fear around not accepting the baby, not wanting, you know, talk us through, did you feel like that? And how did you kind of get past that?
Such an important topic. A lot of us older mums are going through that, and not necessarily older, a lot of us, we are going through egg donors because there's the option to. And so when I was going through my miscarriages, a fertility doctor said to me, just really not very nicely, just like, have you thought of egg donor? I was like, well, no. I want this to be genetically mine. And it took a while and took someone kind enough to sit me down and tell me, the only way to have a healthy baby is an egg donor. And that was when I was ready to do it. And when you go through the egg donor process, you do have some control of who your egg donor is, obviously. You read through their profiles. You can choose someone that looks like you, and which is what we did with Lowy and which is what we did with Milo. So the egg donor has very similar characteristics of me. And that is that's saving grace for me. That's why I'm sharing it. It's quite nice to see that there's some facial similarities. I think that's just my ego wanting to connect on that level. There is a lot of grief when you're going through an egg donor because it's not you. It's not your genetics. And I personally felt a lot of shame around that. And I was like, how do I tell my family? How do I tell my family that there's no genetic link to this baby? But to be honest, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. And I think people have to go through their process to get to that point. And it is a process. You have to go through the grief. You have to acknowledge the loss and the grief there. And once you do, then you come to a point where you're like, I love this baby regardless. And what you're doing is you're nurturing this baby, you're mothering this baby, and you're parenting this baby. And that's what he's going to remember. I still worry about the genetic side, you know, illnesses and so many other things, but I belong to a lot of like support groups around that. And so they can really help you through connecting with the egg donor's medical records. And so that you have that. And so that is like, okay, I've checked that off. If that was a concern and a worry, I now have done something about it and that's done. So my journey to acceptance was full of shame, was full of grief and loss. And still to the day, still to that moment when Milo was born, I was like, you know, he's genetically not mine. And I had to adopt him because he was born in Idaho. I had to go through a second parent adoption, which was like, really? Like, I've been through all this and now you're putting this gigantic full stop at my sentence that I have to achieve. Like, it's just like, I don't know. Anyway, so I had to go to court and do all that. And I think that's for me when I was like, I'm his mom. So my journey was a little bit different. But anyways, when you hold your baby and you look into his eyes or her eyes and you know that you're going to be loving him and that you're going to be nurturing him or her, it just changes. It just changes. And then you start to change your lens and you start to change your narrative around like, I am so appreciative that I was able to get an egg donor because now you are here. And so there's a lot of feelings around that. I truly believe that there needs to be more conversation around it. I truly believe there needs to be more support systems around that. You know, the medical field isn't equipped to deal with the grief and the mental health around egg donor. And it's really important to talk about that because once you talk about it and have the awareness and be able to move through, then you can come into the acceptance. But I kind of went all over the place there, and that's exactly what my journey was. It was kind of like grief, joy, shame, blah, blah, blah. But I'm so grateful for having an egg donor. I'm so grateful that we had the opportunity to go to do that, because that's how Lily came into this world, and that's how Milo came into this world. So now I look through it with a lens of gratefulness. But like I said, Kat, it's definitely a journey that you go through.
That little boy, yeah, is loved more than he could ever imagine. So yeah.
Oh my God. Interesting enough, people will say, oh my God, Jen, he's got your eyes, not knowing he's an egg donor. I was like, I'll take that. Thank you very much.
I would take that too, for sure. So then the other thing, and this is really hard to talk about, and I think in the last series, this did come up once. And I was quite towards the end of my pregnancy. And, you know, it's like, do I want to say this on here? But I think people are thinking it. I know I was thinking it. And you have been through stillbirth, you know, so you have carried a baby up until, you know, that, what was it, 39 and six?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, like I remember someone saying to me that they went to NCT, which is, you know, the kind of prenatal group thing, and they had a conversation around what are your fears, and it was like, I'm scared of giving birth, I'm scared of this, scared of that. And the person that I know was thinking, I'm scared of stillbirth, because they know a lot about the community, because it's IVF. And I know that I was scared about that, because you do hear about it happening. You know, how do you, having been through that, is my question. It's not a 7-week miscarriage. And you think, once I get to 8 weeks, you know, I'm further than I was before. Yes. You know, I'm not out of the woods, but I'm further, you know, I've got past where, you know, the last one ended, which is, you know, was certainly the case for me on one experience. But, you know, you're at the end and you're thinking, I'm still not past where I got to before. Like, how do you, I genuinely, how do you get through that?
Yeah. You know, pregnancy after loss is it's just got so many layers and so many complexities. And when you're pregnant after loss with a surrogate, it's the same thing, but it's just different layers, different complexities. And you're right, when you experience a stillbirth, it's not till the day of when you're holding your baby and watching him breathe and his eyes are actually open, you know, like stillbirth, eyes closed, no breathing, obviously. So I had to be really strategic around this. And I spoke to the doctor and I said, I can't go past 39 weeks with this pregnancy. Like, I will actually have a nervous breakdown. I'm just not willing to go through that suffering. And so I had to really self-advocate. And I said, if everything is good and if he's in good, like health or weight, can we please induce at 39 weeks? And he said, oh my God, definitely. So we induced Milo at 39 weeks to the date so that I didn't have to go through that trigger and trauma again. Because Kat, to be honest, I don't know what I would have done. I would have obviously had tools. I would have obviously gone through it, because we survive, the human spirit will find a way. But I just was self-advocating and I was like, no, I'm not going to go past. If I have a choice, I do not want to go past 39 weeks. And yeah, of course there's some risks with inducing, and you know, Pitocin and everything, but for me, it was so minimal. The risks were so incredibly minimal to a stillbirth or going through all what you have to go through. So that's what I did for me. I'm not a doctor. But I have to say that it's something to be curious about if you were going through a surrogate and if you've had a stillbirth, to look into inducing, to look into maybe scheduling an induction. If you feel comfortable, be curious, ask the professionals, obviously. But, you know, with IVF baby and with what we were going through, it just made sense to do it. And so that's what we did. But yeah, you know, you're anxious and fearful and scared till that moment when your baby starts to cry and open his eyes or her eyes, because it's, you know, it's still something that you hold on to, that memory, that, you know, giving birth to your dead baby.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. And I'm sorry to ask you, but I'm so grateful of you to share, you know, because there will be people going through similar experiences. And, you know, because I know a lot about, you know, fertility and pregnancies thereafter and pregnancy after loss, it was something that played on my mind a lot. And I know that there will be people listening who that's the case. And, you know, as you say, like, look into it, speak to your medical professionals. Lots of pregnancies are very successful, you know, that go to 40, 41, 42 weeks. But, you know, it was the right thing for you to do, as you say, to advocate on behalf of yourself because of the trigger and the trauma that you would have had to go through had the pregnancy gone over the 39 weeks. So, yeah. I can totally hear why you will have done that, for sure.
Also, to share with everyone too that, and it's really hard for our subconscious mind to think this, but it's also quite important to remind the human spirit that every pregnancy is different. So just because you've gone through a loss or a few losses doesn't mean that this current one will be that. And I know it's incredibly hard to understand, incredibly hard to kind of wrap your head around, because, you know, our emotions and our subconscious is holding onto that pain and holding onto the memory, and that's all that we know. However, healthy babies are born, like, this does happen. And every pregnancy is a different pregnancy. And it's really coming back to the facts, like you said earlier, like, the facts are really, really important to help you with pregnancy after loss or surrogacy after loss.
Yeah, for sure. I've just flicked over to your Instagram, and you posted something recently that just hit the nail on the head. And I know that I put it on my stories, and so many people, you know, came back to me and said 100%, you know, that's exactly how I felt. Being pregnant after loss is like holding your breath for 9 months. And that's just, you know, in my experience, certainly, and so many people that I know, that explains it perfectly. You really are just on tenterhooks, aren't you? And you want to enjoy it. And then you have a moment of fear, and then you're like, no, I've got to enjoy this. You know what? And, you know, something I say time and time again is, I got to the stage where I thought the only thing that's going to be affected really is my ego. Because if I fall and if it all goes wrong, I'm going to fall. It doesn't matter how hard at that point. And the only reason that I'm going to kind of wish that I hadn't enjoyed it is because my ego is going to be upset, you know, and embarrassed that I had thought I was pregnant and I was enjoying it, and then it all went kind of wrong. And so, you know, like, push that ego aside and just enjoy whatever you can, and hopefully all the way up to holding that baby in your arms, like you say, with the eyes open, the crying. Yeah, that's what you want, really, isn't it? And hopefully, like it has for us. So it does happen, it really does. Pregnancy after infertility and loss, you know, that there is success, will happen for so many people that are listening too. And I will put details of your website in the show notes if you want to say it now, and your Instagrams as well, because we can follow you on Instagram, can't we?
Yeah, you can definitely follow me on Instagram. Yeah, Louise Hugs has been an incredible journey, and that community has been absolutely amazing. I've just met such strong, brave women that are just going through some really crappy experiences. And we're just holding space for all of us, really. Like, community is so vital for the human spirit. And like you said, like, pregnancy after loss it's got a lot of anxiety and pain, but definitely community and being aware of those small victories are really important for the human spirit. You know, it's creating, it's like what you're doing, right? It's creating something that you needed at that time that you couldn't really find. And then from that, that's where a lot of the healing comes from. So.
Yeah, because so much of it is, you know, to coin a phrase, knowing that you're not alone. That is the start of the help, isn't it? Just hearing that there are other people experiencing it
totally makes
you feel like you're not, or makes you realize, not just feel, but realize that you aren't alone in this. And then the more you talk to people, the more bonding you have, the more support, it makes such a difference. And yeah, that's exactly why I created this podcast, because I realized that people kind of hole up and back away because they don't want to talk about being pregnant in a negative light, or, you know, with a negative light on it, because so many people that they're in a community with are trying to get pregnant. And at that point, we think that's the Holy Grail. And then you get pregnant and you realize, no, actually the Holy Grail is like holding your baby, you know, who is breathing and crying and their eyes are open. And like, yeah, it's just, it's all part of the journey. It really is. It's all part of infertility. I truly believe that. So thank you so, so, so much. I really appreciate you sharing everything with us. And I will leave you now so that you can get back to Milo.
Yes, of course. Well, thank you so much for holding space with me. And I just think this time together has been just so amazing and precious. So thank you.
Really incredible. Thanks so much, Jen. All right then. Bye-bye.